going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive, up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Thanks so much, Capital. It is the Going Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett, and I am super excited for the Olympics to finally be here after we saw the athletes float down the River Seine in Paris, 6-kilometer trip. Now we can get some performances and some medals, even though the Olympics have to do everything backwards and they have games start before the opening ceremony. But here we are. The games have started for real. And as they start, I want to make this episode all things Olympics. As I believe I mentioned before, I'm going to be covering the Olympics for CBC. So you can catch me there nightly on CBC News Network, on Canada Tonight, breaking down everything that you've seen, a perspective piece in the primetime show on CBC, hosted by the outstanding Andy Petrillo, friend of the podcast. And that's where my mind is at right now. So it only seems right to make the Going Deep podcast Olympic themed to start us off in the Paris Games. And when I think Olympics, partially because he's arguably one of our greatest Olympians, partially because we share the same name, I think Donovan Bailey. He actually is going to be a teammate of mine these Olympics. He's going to be breaking down everything that's happening on the track with our very own Ron McLean. So make sure you see that dynamic duo. But he has been the gold standard, literally, for us in Canadian sprinting, both as a sprinter, ambassador, and a broadcaster. And I wanted to talk to Donovan not only about what he's excited about for these games and how the sprinting lines up, because it is an incredibly deep field. If you saw the Netflix documentary Sprint, lots of contenders on multiple nations looking for gold, including obviously our Canadian, and in the one and the two, that would be Andre DeGrasse. But Bailey has that championship DNA in him, which is why it's really cool he partnered up with Ancestry.ca. So you can figure out, what do your traits, your sensibilities, your DNA compare to Olympic greats like Donovan Bailey or Rosie McLennan or Gabby Douglas or Kerry Walsh Jennings? I like all of them. I like Donovan the most. So let's go deep with Donovan Bailey on all things Olympics.
DB, what a guan. We've got Olympics coming up. I know you're excited.
Dude, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to, you know, for the games this year. There's so much unknowns. So I'm looking forward to see those that are going to put their foot, you know, on the track and you know, replace it with their mouths, I guess.
Yes, no question. Well, speaking of unknowns, your DNA and your ancestry no longer unknown. When I saw Grits, Guts, and Genetics, I said, is Donovan already working on his next book? But no, it's a partnership with Ancestry DNA. So tell me, what did you learn in the process in terms of your own DNA and what that map tells you in terms of, you know, some of the traits that you have as a champion?
You know what? I mean, the very first thing that I was curious about was where my people came from. So, you know, obviously, you know, regions of the world, you know, Nigeria, Benin, Togo, Cameroon, Congo, Ivory Coast, Ghana. I mean, I knew that part, but I never actually realized, you know, that I'm also that Scottish, and Welsh, and also I'm 1% Jewish. So I'm going to tell that to my lawyer, man, when I get off the phone with you. You know, so listen, I'm going to try and capitalize on that as much as possible. But you know, the traits, you know, like my competitiveness, you know, like things that allowed me to be, you know, my focus, my discipline, things that allowed me to be the champion. Yeah, those are all things. You know, at the end of the day, I've always been an extremely curious person. So, you know, when I have this opportunity to partner with Ancestry and they could give me all these answers, I definitely want to talk to you guys about it and encourage other people that if they're as curious as I am, that they should go out and seek this by, you know, going out and get their own kit and satisfy their own curiosity.
I love it. And I'm definitely going to do the same because, you know, for all 40 years of my life, as you know, people say, well, hey, your name's Donovan, you're Jamaican, your family's from the same parish. Why aren't you running fast times on the track? So I'm going to get the kit. I'm like, yes, we have the same name, but the I don't have the championship DNA in the same way as him. But we do now share the same trade in terms of broadcasting. So excited to see you and Ron McLean in studio breaking down everything that's happening in and around the track and for our great athletes. And when you look at this field, it's wide open. Both on the men's and women's side, how would you categorize, the meat of all meats, the Olympics coming up?
You know what? First of all, I got to say, your championship DNA and your championship trait, my man, is in broadcasting. You mentioned yourself and also Ron McLean. And I'm so, so happy to be on this relay team with you guys because coming from track and field where I was one of the best, I'm coming in and I'm working with, with the best people here. So I'm certainly looking forward to that. Now, categorizing the competition this year, listen, what happens every single 4 years is that you have incredible human beings that, that have trained and prepared themselves. We hope to see the top 8 specimens of women and men lining up in each event. And, you know, there's going to be nothing different this year. There's going to be some changing of the guard. There's going to be some new stars. There's going to be some incredible performances. I mean, I see it already. And with this carbon fiber shoe and this new track, this is equipped to break records. Now, I don't want to see records broken that way, but it is what it is. And ultimately, we're going to see these kids do, like, massive things, and I'm looking forward to it, man.
Talk to me about the technology, both of the shoe and the track, because records are made to be broken, but there are some that I just looked up and said, no one's touching that, right? If you don't have the size and the turnover of Usain Bolt, the math just says you're not breaking that. But when you look at the technological advances that we're now seeing, how does that benefit and put people in optimal position that if they run a perfect race, they could be in the conversation?
Well, listen, we can talk technology all day, but genes are genes. I mean, that's why we're talking about it with Ancestry, the partnership here. Ultimately, yes, you've seen both 6'5", 6'6". No one's going to have his stride pattern or his speed or his turnover or his gait. So you need to have someone comparable to that. And you have a once-in-a-generation athlete like that. When I broke the world record, I was one of one. You know, and so ultimately, the technology, the carbon fiber shoe. Now, you know, I can only tell you what Dan Path, my coach, my old coach, says to me. And he's saying that, you know, if we had that sort of technology, then the world, we would have put, I mean, he said, I in particular would have pushed the world record farther than it is today, which certainly meant that if Usain had the same technology, he would have pushed the world record farther than it is too. You know, so with technology and with people being bigger, stronger, faster, every single generation, we know that records are made to be broken. That's actually why I'm looking forward to this. There are some incredible people that are coming up. Kishane Thompson, someone who's been injury prone for the past couple of years. He came and ran, well, he's jogged 97.7. He looks very good. Oblique Seville, someone with incredible turnover, someone who's done very well and is very capable of winning in Paris. I mean, Noel Lyles is probably the guy who you probably hear of the most because he's the one that's most out there and that's talking. What we did when I was growing up is the guy that chirps the most was the guy that gets the best licks, right? So Again, we're going to see how man versus man will be or woman versus woman will be in Paris. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm so looking forward to it.
Well, I mean, let me stop you if this sounds like something you've heard before. It's a big track meet and the Americans are talking the most, right? Some things in life just don't change. But when you talk about trying to show up and perform at your best, there's two aspects of it. Tapering to make sure that you are running times in form at the time of year when the medals hit different, and this is an Olympics, they hit different, but also managing your energy throughout the rounds, throughout the heats, if you're running multiple distances throughout the entire competition so that when you're in a final, you can show up and show out. It seems to be not just the ability, but the IQ of navigating a meet is important. What are those conversations in that aspect of it like?
Well, the easiest thing to prepare for at the Olympic Games is the physical thing. So it is the training, it is the weightlifting, therapy even. You know, the multiple cycles that you have to go through, you know, and to taper to kind of get your maximum speed. That is actually the easiest thing to do going into, well, Paris or going into a major championships. What has to happen, though, especially some of these athletes who are not used to running rounds where they're in the Diamond League and it's a one-shot race, you know, that, like measuring and managing your mental and your psychological preparation is going to be daunting for some of these athletes, especially those that are really good and really fast. And then they're there, you know, for the first time under the lights with live audience, you know, and billions of people watching. So that's going to be crazy. I mean, there are a bunch of really good athletes, veterans, although a lot of them are young, that has been under the lights before, and they tend to manage very well. I mean, we can talk about DeGrasse, our own Andre DeGrasse. When he shows up at the major championships, you know, he doesn't do spectacular things during the Diamond League season, but at the major championships, he knows how to manage and balance his physical preparation as well as his mental and psychological preparation. So I think that if he goes through to the finals in the one and the two, then he's going to be a force to be reckoned with. A guy like Lestile Tobogo in the men's 100 meters, he's very young, but he's also a junior champion, junior world record holder. He's going to be trouble, man. I mean, he's going to be trouble for these guys. When I look at someone like Oblique Seville has been fourth. So he's gotten the worst place in the last two major championships. I believe that he's here and he's relaxed. And again, as long as these guys stay injury free, man, we're in for probably one of the best games ever.
Well, before I let you go, and this is the longest you've ever done an interview without someone asking you about Andre DeGrasse, so you're welcome. We'll finish with him. You know, we talk about DNA and if it could be passed from great Canadian sprinter to great Canadian sprinter. What you two have in common is in races late, there's no panic. Mm-hmm. And as everyone decelerates, you guys hold form and thus accelerate. I wonder, though, in terms of his form coming into the games, the fact that he hasn't run one of the fastest times at the one or the two, how much mentally can an athlete have the audacity to believe that even though I haven't shown it when the gun goes off, I can somehow get myself to a place to get a medal? Do you have to have a rational confidence in that sense, or do you need the evidence of good results to have you in a good mind?
Number one, if you are vying to be the number one athlete, actually, if you're vying to be the number one at anything in the world, man, you must have confidence in the first place. You have to have the work ethic. You have to have passion. And ultimately, also, when we watch competition and someone like Andre competing, a lot of times what the average person doesn't really understand is that some competitions that you see on the circuit some of these permit competitions, doing the Diamond League, you are watching someone, you know, competing through training. Simply means that, you know, that race that you've witnessed is probably just one of one or two or three or four races that they're running that day in training. So, you know, just take the time out to go run a race and that's it. So times are not relevant to me during the Diamond League. Obviously, when you get to a place where you're sharpening and you're getting real speed work done before a final competition or before major championships, that's what matters. And so I don't ever, when I see and watch Andre compete, I never really worry about his in-season. I look at his transition. I look at the ease in which he's running, especially at the end of the race, which simply means I know he has a lot left in the tank. I look at body language and mannerisms. At the end of the day, if you go out and you run 10 seconds, and it's a very easy 10 seconds, it simply means that there's so much more. And so I believe that he has so much more to give. And of course, you know, I know yourself and all of Canada hoping that, you know, he gets through the rounds. I mean, it'd be tough this year because you know, he's got to run 9.8 low, 9.7 to make it into the 100 meters. And in the 200 meters, he's going to have to break his own Canadian record to even get on the podium. Do I believe he can do it? Absolutely. So I've never worried about what he does in season. I know that he's always ready when the lights are shining brightest.
Well, same is true for you. My only worry is you talk about managing energy through the games is that you do that, because as these events take place and people know who have seen, you know, broadcast legend Bob Babinski film you as races go on and post it, you're running the races and you're jumping the hurdles with our great athletes. So make sure you're foam rolling. Make sure you're doing your plyos. We don't need a pulled hamstring from Donovan Bailey. We got to get you to August 11th because we know you're so excited about all the things these athletes do as they try to carry on the legacy that you in Canadian track and field and Canadian sports at large. Enjoy it, my man. Enjoy it. Thank you so much for breaking it down for us.
Well, thank you, man. Thank you. I definitely want Andre to be the next guy to be the Olympic 100-meter champion, for sure.
Thanks so much to Donovan for his time, and I wish we shared more genes and not just a name. You can actually go and track how your genes compare to him and other great athletes with the Ancestry DNA Plus Traits test. All you got to do, ancestry.ca/bringyourdnagame. Through August 9th, so almost until the end of the games you have, where the games end on August 11th. Go on and get yourself a family history subscription, a DNA Plus membership, and figure out what traits you have that align with great Olympic athletes. One of the ones that you could check to see if yours align with is Felicia George, who is doing some coverage for CBC in Paris and was a part of an outstanding Open to the broadcast and CBC. So cool. If you have 8 minutes, go and check it out. We'll put that in our show notes for this episode. Okay. With that, let's take a break, reset, and continue talking about all things Olympics in terms of cultivating a championship culture within a country and making sure that all sport is accessible, specifically women's para hockey in this country.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson has a show.
And I'm so happy that you are listening to Go and Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grandma and Granddad. It is the Go and Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett, and I'm really proud of the work that we've done here at Rogers Sports and Media in terms of the All In initiative. And if you haven't heard about it, what it is we, as a company, have pledged to give support and funds and resources and marketing to businesses and charities who are doing work on behalf of equity-seeking groups. One of the initiatives we have in this year's campaign of All In is hashtag Stixon with the women's national para hockey team, which I'm sure you'll be surprised to learn, I certainly was, is not fully funded. It's one of the only national sports organizations in our country to not have full funding. Up until last year, the team and its athletes have been self-funding along with trying to be high-performing athletes. I say up until last year because Canadian Taller stepped up in a big way to help to provide funding, but still more is needed. So hopefully, whether that is through Hockey Canada or the government or the private sector and corporate sector in Canada, we need to close the gap to help these great athletes be just that, great athletes. So I wanted to talk to Claire Buchanan, who has played as a great athlete for a long time and now is doing this advocacy work about that push for equity in para hockey and the systems around it to change some of those barriers that are far too high and too hard to break for female athletes and Paralympic athletes, and in this case, a merge of the two. Let's go deep on hashtag Stixon with Claire Buchanan.
So Claire, thanks so much for joining and thanks so much for everything that you're doing. And one of the things I want to talk about that I'm excited about and also disappointed in at the same time is the Stixon collaboration with Rogers and the All In initiative. I love the fact that, you know, we here at Rogers Sports and Media get to lend our platforms to a worthy cause like women's national para hockey here in Canada. I'm dismayed that there's that level of need, that the team isn't fully funded, which I guess, and my fault for making an assumption, my thought would be it would be fully funded because why wouldn't be? Talk to me a little bit about what the realities of not fully funding our women's para hockey program is.
Yeah, you stated it perfectly. We're kind of in this weird balance of we're really excited of where we are creating the sport and where we're pushing it towards. And we're being a part of a lot of firsts, which we see in other women's sports right now as well. So that in itself is exciting, but it's also kind of it's a downfall that we are in this position, that we are having to raise our voices so much to, get equity in sport. And it's exciting projects like this with Rogers All In and our Stixon initiative that we get to put women's para hockey on a platform that it hasn't been on yet. And it's exciting what the future holds for the sport. But yes, at the same time, it's unfortunate that we're having to kind of fight this battle.
You know, the para, obviously should stand for parallel. But when you look at this specific case, right, we don't see the equality in terms of what's happening in men's hockey, for example, or women's hockey with, you know, the women's para team. But also we're not seeing equality in terms of what's happening on the men's side in Paralympic competition as compared to the women's side. Why do you think that is the case?
I mean, we can talk about kind of the differences and comparisons at the national level, but at the kind of foundation of it all, there just isn't enough women and girls playing the sport globally as well. Aside from also trying to bring in corporate sponsors to get us at the same equity as the men's Paralympic team, it's another push to say to women and girls with disabilities out there in Canada and globally that this sport exists and there's a path to the Paralympic Games if you jump on board with us right now and growing the sport and creating that not just equity within Canada for para hockey, but globally to grow the game to where there is a Paralympic tournament for women specifically at the Paralympic Games.
You know, I look at this somewhat like a self-fulfilling prophecy. There isn't enough women in order
for there to be, you know, quote unquote, the need for funding at that level. Yet, if you're asking women to compete to fund themselves, how do you attract more women? What can be done to bridge that gap and open the pipeline for more women to be able to compete?
Yeah, it's projects like Sticks In and Rogers All In. It's giving opportunities for more exposure to bring in corporate sponsorship. And it's for myself, I'm in my 10th year with the national team. And up until 2022, when we had companies like Canadian Tire come on board, we were paying out of pocket to play for the national team and wear that Canada crest. And some athletes were paying anywhere up to $15,000 a season just to put on that Canada jersey and be able to train at what we know is the national level, to be able to compete at the national level as well. We all know at high performance sport, there's training, there's so much involved, and it's not just getting on the ice. It's everything involved. And it's, again, like we started our conversation talking about, we're in this interesting space where it's cool that for a veteran like myself on the team, yes, a lot of expenses are being more and more covered, and that's good to see for the next generation. But we are nowhere near where we need to be in order to give women at the national level the true experience of being on a national team and training like a national team athlete. And it's breaking down those barriers of, if we get the funding, we can be on the ice more, we can be in the gym more, we can have that lifestyle that the men are getting on a year-to-year basis right now. And it's, we have athletes that if you give them the access to those resources, you are going to see the best sledge hockey players here in Canada compete and train and just show that the next generation and right now of para hockey players is are really good, and they're truly changing the game. And that's what campaigns like this is helping push, is changing the game for women and girls here, like I said, in Canada, but also globally, to show that if you give us the same access, we can give you just as great results as you see on the men's side.
This has been your lived experience as an athlete for a decade. Bring our listeners to a level of better understanding of what that experience and a journey has been like for you from both the pros and the cons.
It's bittersweet. It definitely has shaped me into the athlete and person I am as an advocate for growing the sport. You hear it through other women's sports of athletes having multiple jobs and being moms at the same time. And that's my lived experience. I do remember having seasons where I was fundraising as much as possible and being a mom and working multiple jobs just to be able to cover those necessities that you need as a national team athlete. Like if you're not in the gym and you're not on the ice, you're not going to stay on a national team, and you're not going to create that culture that a national team needs as well in order to be successful. So it's bittersweet. I'm glad that I've been able to be a part of this group of athletes and staff. We talk a lot about the athletes, but there's a whole group of staff behind us that have been doing the same thing, paying out of pocket, just showing up to make sure that us as athletes can play and compete as athletes as well. So it's not just the athletes, it's all of us. And it's truly going to take everybody involved to get us where we want to go. And 2030 is a big goal for us, not just in Canada, but globally, to be able to showcase to the world that women's para hockey is attainable, and it's a good sport to be invested in.
I love that you mentioned 2030, because that's where I wanted to take this conversation. you know, certainly just again for people listening, you know, the men are funded as an NSO. Mixed National Para Hockey Team is funded through Hockey Canada, but you know, essentially, you know, one woman has played for that mixed team. No woman has played, you know, that's currently rostered in terms of, you know, Paralympic competition, which brings me to, you know, the hope and the goal to get a para hockey event in the Paralympics with, as you mentioned, the sights set to 2030. What does that look like? You know, talk to me about the roadmap from where we are in 2024 to make that a reality in 2030.
Yeah, so when we talk globally about growing the game, when you look at the goal for 2030, we want a tournament in those Paralympic Games. And you have to, the reality is you have to have a certain number of teams to make a tournament. And while North America and countries like Great Britain have done a fantastic job of evolving their programs and giving a space for women's para hockey within those programs, it's showing other countries that, hey, we have a goal, it's attainable. And if you invest in your programs and your country and the women who are playing para hockey in your country, that we can have this tournament where we can watch a full tournament of women's para hockey players fighting for a gold medal. Right now we have tournaments like the Women's World Challenge every year, and we will be having world championships here in the future. But the goal is, when you're a national team athlete, the goal is to fight for a gold medal at the games. That's what you want. That's what you want for your athletes and for the growth of the sport. So with the help of corporate sponsorship, but also showing that projects like this, and if you invest in yourself and your athletes, that why not start a national team? Why not have a national team mixed in with your stand-up and other men's para hockey programs? Because there's women out there that want to play the sport, and we just have to show that it's there, we exist, and you can have this lifestyle of playing for Team Canada.
So that's the macro. Before I let you go, I want to pick your brain a little bit about the micro in terms of the benefits for the individual, specifically, you know, female athletes to have access to these opportunities. What does it mean to them from identity, belonging, health standpoint, to be able to, you know, have opportunities as a Paralympian or a para athlete in hockey?
Yeah, so I mean, if you're competing to be on the national team and stay on the national team, that's fantastic. That's what we're trying to grow here. But you have to have that filter in of not only next generation athletes, but it's okay that we have athletes introducing them to women's para hockey just to have a healthy lifestyle, just to show them that as someone with a disability, you can still do these things that are fun and active, and you get out in your community. And that's the biggest benefit that I've gotten from the sport, is the community that I have. And it works both within the sport and outside the sport of creating communities and friendships. And yeah, kind of bringing together a group of people that have the same goal, not only just for at the national team level, but all the way down to the little kid that just wants to play hockey with her friends, you know. So we all start this sport, and we play the sport because it's fun, and that's the basis of it. We want to show women and girls that the sport is here, and however you want to access the sport, you're welcome.
So now we've learned what it means. Let us know what we can do as individuals. What is the call to action for us to be able to support the movement?
That's exactly it. A call to action. I think that great things come out of conversations just like this. And All it takes is one person to say, hey, I'm in. And I love the name of the campaign Sticks In, because that's all we're looking for. We're looking for a community and corporate sponsors that just want to put their stick in and say, we want to be a part of this, because we're in a great place for the growth of women's para hockey, and the future of it is really exciting. And why don't you want to be a part of that, right? The next generation of women para hockey players having that opportunity to fight for a gold medal. The thought of it gives me chills every time. Like, I can't wait. I can't wait to be there and get to experience that moment with my teammates and staff that have gone through the trenches. Like, we are in the trenches right now, but man, when we get out of there and fight for that gold medal one day, it's all going to be worth it.
I have chills hearing you talk about it. It sounds eerily similar to similar conversations we've had for years in women's hockey. And as I talk to you, I see the PWHL playoffs towel behind you, and you know, look how far we've come in that short time, given the success. So hopefully we can continue to ride that wave. You know, if we are going to think of ourselves as a hockey nation, as a progressive nation, certainly, then we need to be much better in this area. And thankfully, you're leading the way. So lots of using the hashtag Sticks In, lots of conversation, as you mentioned. Thanks so much, given everything you have going on, having this conversation with us.
Yeah, thank you as well. This is huge for the game.
Thanks so much to Claire. You heard from her how you can help. Use that hashtag Sticks In. Get the conversation started so that we can get change started. And if we want to consider ourselves as Canadians, as a progressive nation and as a sporting nation, it's something we should rectify. I always am interested when it comes to Olympic time, what nations punch above their weight, whether it's based off of their own GDP or their own population size or the sports that come naturally to them based off of geography and culture. And one nation for me that does that in both the Winter Games but also the Summer Games is Norway. When you look at some of the great athletes Norway has produced in so many different sports, even look at these games, Casper Ruud in tennis, Victor Hovland, obviously an outstanding golfer, Kasper Warholm in hurdles, Anders Moll and Christian Sørum in beach volleyball, Richard Ordemann in taekwondo. For some reason, every time I turn on the TV and see who is in medal contention, I see a Norwegian flag. And so I wondered, what is going on in the Scandinavian country that not only are they making many of the suits that are in my wardrobe, they're making many of the athletes that I'm watching on television. Well, the secret sauce, if you will, is the subject of a recent book by Anders Inset, who himself is an elite athlete and thought leader. The Viking Code, The Art and Science of Norwegian Success, is the book by Anders, who now is not just someone who's focused on sports. He's focused on being an economic philosopher and an entrepreneur. And his findings don't just influence how things should be set up for success in sports. They actually influence how things should be set up for success in any walk of life. So I want to, as I hope to have a better understanding as I watch these games, ascertain what the hell is going on in Norway and how can we implement maybe just a little bit of that in our Canadian system and culture. Let's go deep on the Viking Code with Anders Inset.
So Anders, I, especially with the Olympics here, am so fascinated in terms of different countries, different cultures, their approach and investment in sport, and why it seems, whether it's the Winter Games, Summer Games, there are some countries that punch above their weight in terms of medals per capita. One of those countries, both in the Winter and Summer Games, for me, anecdotally, has seemed to consistently been Norway, even among, you know, the Scandinavian nations. You've written about maybe some of the secret sauce there in the book, The Viking Code, The Art and Science of Norwegian Success. I want to know the art and science, but I also want to know why the topic interested you in the first place.
Yeah, Donovan, I mean, Norway is famously known for winter sports. And although there have been success also with the summer games, it is most recently that very untypical sports and also larger sports like golf, tennis, soccer, of course, but at the Olympia, 400 meter hurdles or even the 1500 meters or the 3000 meters, which has been typically dominated by African athletes or every now and then some American runners that would be on the top of the list. And all of a sudden there are Norwegians, and most of them are young men, and they have something similar that I was curious about, because to me it was not normal that a small country would produce all these athletes. So I've been curious about sports my whole life. I'm a philosopher and investor, but I've been actively participating in many sport disciplines, and I was very curious to understand why this phenomena over the past 10 years has emerged. So that was the motivation for writing this book and digging into how can you produce a high performance country from a country like Norway, where there is more snow and people are wealthy and have oil and doesn't necessarily participate in these giant sports on the global scene.
Oh, I'm fascinated to figure out what you learned and how much of it was intentional and strategic, and how much was it just an affluence of cultural factors with positive benefit?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And that was what struck me the most. So I called one of the leading coaches in Norway on athletic coaches that I work with, all these athletes. And I asked them, you know, how all of a sudden did Norway get this high performance culture beyond the Winter Games? And as we started to look at that phenomena, it was things that I write about in the book that I don't think are necessarily even clear to the Norwegian population. So I think some of these are based on some coincidences, a culture that has formed other athletes to also believe in themselves, to go out and try to conquer the world and to be number one in their discipline. So there's an age thing. And obviously there is a new phenomenon that I discovered, and that is that something that used to be seen as a contradiction, that values and team play in individual sports did not go hand in hand with success. And what it turns out is that this high performance culture that has been developed is deeply rooted in values. And it is rooted in a value system that the whole intention is to uplift other athletes and colleagues and even competitors, because the intrinsic motivation comes from when everyone around me performs better, I have the chance to grow even more. And that is particularly true, obviously, in team sports. But it turns out that this is also a phenomenon that has been manifested in the ethos of Norway. There is a concept called dugnad. And many have read about the Hygge of Denmark. It was a book that was globally published on their lightweight culture and happiness factors. And dugnad is very typical for Norway. And it basically means that people show up just to help others, because historically speaking, in Norway, you had to participate, you had to help. Me, myself, come from a smaller town. And when I grew up, I had to do all the sports. I had to play team handball, football, soccer in Norway, and do biathlon and cross-country skiing. Because if I did not participate, the others did not have a team, and vice versa. So we developed a very broad toolbox so that we had a broad set of skills that helps us later to adapt to new circumstances and then to specialize. So these are some of the small things that I found that was not clear in the beginning. And going after the high performance culture, I think the big surprise was the value system that seemed to be contradictional to most of the high performance cultures that we have seen over the past decades.
Funny, it seems with the benefit of technology, things sometimes trend the opposite, where you want to be sport specific and hyper focused on specialization. But when you look at many of the outstanding Olympic athletes, there are people who played various sports growing up as kids and have a broad base of skills, as you mentioned. I wonder if we could apply some of those lessons that we're seeing in a sporting context to other facets of our life, business, leadership, family. Are there transferable lessons from Dugnad that we can see in other aspects?
Yeah, there are quite a few actually. And the second part of the book is all about the Viking code applied to politics, education, and business in general. So my field is technology. I've been a hardcore capitalist, although I had a sports background. That has been my main focus over the past years. So I've been working with leaders and decision makers all around the world. But what I saw is that this optimization culture and specialization is something that technology is obviously very good at. So the maximization of knowledge to build experts in one particular domain was the old model. Then we got AI and we got a broader, you know, global competitive market. And now it seems to be understanding, a deeper understanding of the game itself. It seems to be how to not only have those larger goals, which is also important, but to have micro ambitions and have an intrinsic motivation to perform versus the society that we have built, which is more on reaction and having a finite answer. So look at it like this. We have been conditioned on a social media factor where the reaction and the impulse on knowledge is our only base criteria for life. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Doesn't matter. It just divides into this absolutism of decisions. And that's the maximization game. And I think in sports, and also obviously in life in general, there is a set of finite games to be won, a result. At the Olympics, you have the gold medal. But on the way to that, and that is particularly true in business and in politics, of course, there are a lot of infinite games. So in politics, you have a finite game, which is called the election. But to govern, to build a long-term strategy to develop a country or a region, that is an infinite game. And that is a different game to play. And it comes out of intrinsic motivation, out of activation, and having micro ambition. So the growth factor comes of the compound interest rate, if you will, of putting in active actions into life and doing so by performing on a regular basis. So I think this applies very much to a society that has become very tired, very reactive, and very insecure. To take back that security, to participate in futuring, or to future, as I call it, where you actively shape a future worth living. And that is true for many fields. And I write about that in a more philosophical note in the second part of the book. But I think also that, coming back to your point on this, what is the secret juice, so to speak, I think it's not very typical Norwegian. I think it's something that can, the book could be written without the Norwegian flag and the Vikings. This is more of a life philosophy that I think we are born to create. We are born to be active. We are born into this life to be curious. And I think that the specialization that many does, if you take the favelas in Brazil, there are so many boys playing soccer. They're not optimized in their training structures, but there are so many of them that one happened to be the next, you know, big superstar. And that is also true for training camps where you have enough resources and the funnel is broad. But for small villages in Canada or Norway or in Germany or whatever, that does not apply. And the second thing that is also very relevant to life in general is that we cannot anticipate fully how the game will look tomorrow. So in a practical example to life, we have no ideas what kind of jobs there will be in 10 years from now. So specializing is a zero-sum game. It's a finite decision that you make versus when you have a broad toolbox and you play all these different games and you get a much deeper understanding of various fields, you put yourself in a position that you can adapt to new circumstances and things that happen in life. So you learn how to tackle ambiguities, you learn how to prepare for the unknown. And if you continue that path with a lot of input and a lot of action, then all of a sudden you're at the top of the throne as a result, as an outcome of a process, and not as a finite goal that is either a zero or a one. So I think there are many lessons learned here for life, Donovan.
You mentioned that thumbs up, thumbs down culture that we have because of our social media apps and our algorithms. And, it was a point of conversation during the most recent Copa America tournament and the Euros in soccer about the development of players. And if there's always a right decision or a wrong decision, it robs players of the creativity that you would get in those favelas when they're playing for fun. Whether it's in sport or in life and business, how can we steer away from the fear of quote unquote being wrong and actually striving to maybe try things to see what works, what doesn't work, and being comfortable with not being successful in every single increment of what we're doing?
Yeah, no, that's a very, very good question. And I think the narrative of our time was the art of being right. There has to be a finite solution. We work on the solution. And then we came up with the notion of saying that, well, we should also do failure. So let's implement failure cultures and we should have tolerance for failure. And I think that's a stupid idea because human beings are conditions for performance cultures. But then there is the path of, how do you cope with learnings or mistakes? And there is what I call the art of being wrong, which is basically the core of philosophy, how I see philosophy. And the whole essence of philosophy is to seek progress and not to win a discussion or to have a finite answer, but to seek progress. And that is also obviously true for science at the deepest level. We want to aim for progress, positive progress in general. And on that path, there are games that we play where we cannot play around as much. In a finals of Copa America, you practice the system, its management, its technology, its high performance, And then there is the playing pitch where you practice all these things that are outside of your knowledge set that moves you beyond. So every organization need to distinguish between when are you in the game, when I'm flying into Toronto or some other airport, I don't want to have a disruptive, creative pilot that tries a lot of stuff, It has to work, that's there is no room for a creational disruptive doctor when you're doing open heart surgery, right? But then you need to move on in the field of science and in all those practices to implement new methodologies and to improve. And that's where you have the practice pitch. It's very relatable in sport because you have the pitch, you have the things where you know that mistakes are a part of it. But in an optimization game in business or in education or all those hierarchical systems that we measure people in towards a one finite stop at the top, there is no room for that understanding. So I think we need to be better to understand when are we on the training pitch? We're putting all the effort, but we don't aim to do mistake. We aim for progress. And we aim so hard at progress that sometimes it goes beyond or sometimes it goes wrong, but then we look at it from a new situation. And that's like life in general. We aim for progress, then there is a pandemic or there is a war or there are things that we cannot control. We are in a new base site criteria and we cannot look at where we were a year ago. We have to look at our starting point, like coming back from an injury, and my next step is my next foot, my next move. And that's the incremental progress that I will put back into life or put back into striving towards success. So I think that is where we got it wrong. We focused all on the art of being right, on a finite way of thinking. And then we started to play with buzzwords and terminologies to compensate for that without tapping into the underlying performance of the human condition, which I believe is to learn, to grow, to be active, and to participate in a active society where human beings come together and are interconnected in a way that they can grow together. And I think that spirit, a spirit of not naive optimism or the negative notion of pessimism, but one of of possibilities, of possibilisms, to see the path of a progress. And I think that's where we could, you know, strive harder to get back into culture in general on a global scale.
Well, it's not the art of being perfect. It's the art and science of Norwegian success. The Viking Code, super fascinating, a great way to frame and think about it. And I'm so thankful, one, that the Wright brothers, you know, tried for some progress, but that, to your point, that, you know, my pilot isn't trying things when he's bringing me home to my friends and family. I love that you push the envelope and ways of thinking with this book, and so thankful that you're willing to talk to us about it.
My pleasure, Donovan. Great speaking to you.
Thanks so much for Anders again. Make sure you're buying The Viking Code for those who would find it as helpful as I did, and go to the website for more insight like that, AndersInset.com, AndersInset.com. And make sure you're watching the Olympics. We've got coverage across our network here at Sportsnet and Sportsnet One. Friends at TSN will also be covering some games. And obviously, if you want to see everything, tune to Channel 6, wherever you live in this country, our public broadcaster, CBC. CBC Gem app is where you can find a feed of whatever you want to watch whenever you want to watch it, on demand or in real time. And if you're looking for me live and in real time, as I mentioned, my perspective pieces will air in a primetime show with Winnie Corn Miller and Craig McMorris and Perdita Felician and Andy Petrillo. And you can find me every night on Canada Tonight on CBC News Network. And you can find me right here. So make sure I'm not going anywhere. The podcast is my baby. It will still continue to come out for as long as show will put up with me. Listen, like, favorite, share, and subscribe. Thanks for listening.